Hello, everyone, and welcome to the MoPod, brought to you by Modate, where we discuss everything Mo, from modern orthodoxy to my opinions and more. I'm your host, Evan Harris, and we have a great guest for you today. Let's get to it. Today, we're sitting down with Danielle Aronovitz. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So for this specific bundle, I'm going to ask the same question to everyone that comes on. Do you consider yourself a shadchan?
I do.
Okay. Connotations, does the word shadchan have to you?
I think when I first heard the word or used the word, everyone kind of thinks they're back in a shtetl in Europe, where there's, you know, a lady in a town, probably with some sort of head covering, sitting on her porch, and people are coming to speak to her. And that's how I think of a shadchan. That more of an old world matchmaker, like Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay, so before we get into it, let's dive into your background and how you got involved in shadchanos in the first place. Where are you from and what do you do?
Okay. I would say it was January 2019. I woke up on a Shabbos. And I said to my husband, I think I want to be a shadchan. He said, perfect. It's right up your alley. You're a people person. Try it. So I live in Woodmere. I have a husband and four kids. Our oldest just got married. I actually was his shadchan. I guess I can add that to my number of how many I've made, including my own and my husband's. I also set us up. So I guess this actually happened like almost 29 years ago, but who knew this would explode into a booming business. I just looked around and I said, singles are not able to meet. There's no place to meet. There's so many rules. And I said, why not try to help people? My first profession and my current profession, which with matchmaking is, I'm a speech language pathologist. I work with special needs children, ages 2 through 21. I've had also some adults. And I think a lot of my sensitivity and empathy and understanding people all those years with language disorders and speech disorders and coaching families and helping them carries over into the matchmaking shadchan business. When you deal with special needs individuals and parents, everyone has, you know, the list, their checklists of things that they want. And everyone has checklists. And I always used to say to parents, pick three things that you would like us to work on. And when you look at an actual special ed document, which is a legal document, we only give individuals three goals. And I carry the three over to when I meet with singles, tell me the three non-negotiable wants that you are looking for in a spouse. So there's a lot of carryover, and it's been quite a booming business since 2019, especially when COVID hit.
Okay. So just to touch upon a few things you said there. Yeah. First, you called it twice a booming business, right? What do you mean by calling it a business?
It's a business in the sense that, first of all, business busy. It keeps me quite busy. Mm-hmm. When you're working with a shadchan and a professional shadchan, I set up like a business plan, what I expect from my singles and then what my singles should expect from me. I really am on call 24/6 minus Shabbos, but on Shabbos, my brain keeps working anyway. And halachically, when you're dealing with a matchmaker and a matchmaker makes a match, there's something called shadchanis, which is, could be, you know, you can give a shadchan money when a match is made, you can give them a gift. So it really is a business. And I do have a business plan that I lay out pretty clearly when singles call me. And it's developed over time as I guess I get 40 plus calls a week of, you know, singles or their parents looking for help.
Gotcha. So I think that a lot of people in modern Orthodox circles, which we're both in, kind of have an issue with this idea of shadchan just being a business, because then it kind of comes to, oh, are they just doing it for money? And at that point, it goes from something that seems like it should be like a nice thing to do to kind of a job. So how do you deal with that when people say things like that?
I think once people get to know me and see my dedication, they see that it's work. It's a lot of coaching. It's a lot of planning, listening. You're up all now hours of the night. I could be traveling in Europe and I'm really never off. I'm not just a matchmaker that takes two pieces of paper and say, okay, A is good with B and I walk away. I'm there till the end. I keep up with, I would say, most of my couples that want to be kept up with, even after they're married. But when someone's working for you, it becomes a business. But the love and care that I take for each and every single, I think that's why people trust me. From them putting their resumes together or their blurbs together or giving them really hard advice, which I think, you know, you probably have seen with me over time. I'm honest, but I'm very careful that I'm not just making a match so I can say, oh, it's number, whatever. I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for people to find each other and be happy and be compatible and stay together. I look at a lot of different, you know, I'm very concerned with people's social emotional state and red flags. And I don't keep people together if I think they should not be together. So I'm not your typical matchmaker or an app and walk away. But I do spend a lot of time and I'm proud of it. So I guess that's how it becomes a business. And people do trust me. And I have people calling me even if I'm not their matchmaker. I tell them, call me. If you get a name of someone, you know, I may know them. I may be able to help you. I'm not charging for that, but I'm there really as a friend. And sometimes I have more info than they'll ever find.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a super nice thing to do and you are putting your time into it. So why not make money from it anyway? So you started in 2019, which is obviously before the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what changes you've seen that you think maybe were caused by COVID or just in the last 3 years in the general matchmaking scene.
So I've seen positives and negatives. I've seen positives where COVID hit, and I work not only with Modern Orthodox, I work with Yeshivish, I work with Baal Tshuvas, I've worked with converts, I really work with everyone. And in every single culture of dating, there are rules. COVID, we became a very much a society where people, they were home, they were alone, there was nowhere to meet. And I think a lot of the rules of dating, whether you're very Orthodox or you're modern, went out the window. Meaning you played online games or you didn't, people that were never on the internet for religious reasons dated on the internet. And a lot of that more relaxed dating is still here today, which is great because we can't puppet every relationship and you can't follow rules because people aren't robots. And you have to understand how people are wired. That's a positive. The negatives, which we've seen in all different disciplines, is a lot of anxiety. There are people who, they're not really extroverts and they don't like dating. And they just are still riding on that, oh, it's COVID, I'm not going to go out. Mm-hmm. So we have to kind of bring them back, you know, back to dating. But as far as the positives, it's people, I think, are just... the rules are out the window. They are, especially with flying. People used to like commit to a date and fly or take a train and put in all that time and money. Mm-hmm. And now it's okay to Zoom and make a phone call and determine from one or two or three Zooms or phone calls if it's appropriate. And I think that saves a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of days off from work for no reason. So that is definitely a positive and it's acceptable. And I think it's okay not to invest so much time. And I think the other thing is the venue of the date, which people are always concerned with, where am I going? What am I doing? Doesn't really matter. You have to have a good time. So if you're going to take with you, you know, two bottles of water and go to a park, that's okay. Where before COVID, it was like, oh, you're a little cheap. Now you can't do that every single date. And if you now just go for a cup of coffee or frozen yogurt, and it's really okay. Of course you want things to develop, but I think the feeling of I have to go wine and dine everyone and do these elaborate things, that's for later on. I think you need to get to know the person and not judge the date on the venue, but judge the date on the date, not the place.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That's very interesting. I never realized the aspect of the more religious communities having to go online during COVID. It's definitely something I never thought about. Yeah. So before we were recording this podcast, we were just in the planning stage. You mentioned that a thing that you've noticed over the years that's really developed and become a beast in and of itself is the concept of hashkafa. And how when you were younger, you never really heard the word hashkafa, and now it's all anyone's talking about when it comes to setups. So if you want to just dive deeper into that and what you think the issues are there.
Okay, so hashkafa now is used to just focus on how religious someone is, whether it's clothing, whether it's how many times a day they daven, how many times a day they learn, if they're into pop culture, English movies. But hashkafa really is the way someone behaves in general. And I don't really understand why that's the first thing that everyone asks, because if you look back at the Torah, when they discuss shidduchim, matchmaking, it's not discussing the hashkafa, it's discussing the midos of the person. What are you looking for in the person? Kindness, warmth, empathetic, sympathetic, whatever it may be. But no one, I rarely get a phone call where someone will say, is he nice? Is she nice? And that's, I think, the missing piece here. Once you hear what's important to you, I think midos is the foundation. Then you can go into religiously if you're on the same wavelength. Because when I'm setting people up, I'm not setting people up that are so far off religiously, but they may be far off midos-wise. And I think we have to just kind of rethink what we're looking for as the foundation and what will keep a marriage together, which is respect, compatibility, compassion, but hashkafa, it changes. But the heart of the person and the manners of the person and the real deep roots of the person, it's hard to change. But I can, you know, hashkafa changes, clothing changes, hair color changes, falls out, changes colors. But we have to really look at the essence of the human being. And that's what will keep a marriage solid.
Gotcha. Just to play devil's advocate a little, I think a big reason a lot of people in the modern Orthodox community don't go to shadchans is because they believe that shadchans don't really know them, that they spend 10 minutes on a phone call and then that's kind of it. And then the shadchan's just sending suggestions without really knowing who they are, different generations, different things that maybe they perceive they care about. And So asking about hashkafa might be popular because how is someone who only spoke to you for 10 minutes supposed to know your mito, let's say? Like, how can you really know personality aspects of a person when you don't really know them?
Understood. So it's interesting. Thank God I've made many shidduchim, and I'm not saying it to be arrogant. I don't know most of my couples. I didn't know most of my couples. I got to know them. I think, again, goes back to the field that I'm in and dealing with individuals for 20 plus years, all different shapes and sizes and educational needs. And I'm into, this is what, how I'm wired. I don't send just because someone's 6 feet and the girl, you know, the guy's 6 feet and the girl's 5'10", it's going to be a great match. I do put thought into it. That's the way I work. And I ask questions that are just a little bit more thinking questions, self-evaluating questions, not just your basic questions. It's just the way I work. But I do understand where people say, oh my gosh, I'm speaking to this lady from Woodmere and how is she going to get me? First of all, I have 4 kids. Right now, ranging from 16 to 23. They are all different and they all are all the same. And I do know many different worlds because our family ranges from yeshivish to super modern. So I have that in my toolbox. So I have a lot of things that I am, my fingers on the pulse in many different communities. But I think really it's the questions I ask. And I listen to what the single's telling me. I can tell right away if there's an arrogant person on the other phone. I can tell if someone probably has some sort of learning issue, and I'll start asking questions, delving on that. The way someone will message me, you know, saying, you know, hi, my name is so-and-so, I would love to speak with you. You know, you can tell even through just a message how someone's upbringing and I guess their mentors are. But hashkafa, I do understand it, because it's very easy for you to say to me, Danielle, look, I don't daven, or I do daven, and I want this and I don't want this. That's for sure. But when I'm giving a name of a person, a suggestion, let's say to you, I'm doing it based on what you've told me and what I've gathered. And that's why I think the midos is still important. But the hashkafa for sure is. But I don't think it's the first thing. It's a way to weed things out for sure. But when I'm sending you an idea after I've interviewed you, I have a pretty good sense of who you are.
Gotcha. Okay, good to know. And I think the background really contributes to that, the fact that you're interviewing other people from your work as a speech language pathologist, and you have this background, definitely contributes to the knowledge of, you know what you're doing, and it's not just some random person trying to do this whole new thing. But on that topic, do you think that a lot of people who are shadchans, claim that they're shadchans, are kind of more just throwing ideas out there, hoping something will stick? Like, what do you think the percentages are of good, honest shadchanas versus just trying to make things stick?
It's a good question. I don't know, because I don't have any data on it. But I think people have very good intentions. Most people do. Most people are good people, and they see singles are really struggling, whether you're 20, 40, 50, 60, and until 120. This is really a very tough chapter to be in. So I'm trying to make it easier. Most of us are. And look, I'm going to send ideas, and someone may say, Danielle, I don't get it. I just don't understand it. So if I can back it up with data, then they'll go, oh, you know what? I'll think about it. But there are matchmakers that just want to just make a match. They just send. I would assume if I was a statistician, there's probably some sort of formula that if you send X amount of names to one person, something's going to hit. I'm not into math, so I can't really figure it out, but I really try to think about it. But most of us do work that way. We really care. And I would say that most people like connecting with a human versus an app. No offense. But I think that we need to do everything, whether it's an app, whether it's a person, whether it's a party, whether going to shul, whether going to a kiddush. And a big problem with COVID was we probably had 18 months or so, 2 years, depending on your community. Social events were gone. Rabbis couldn't invite their young congregants. You couldn't have a kiddush. You couldn't go to a bar. Whatever it was, there were no weddings. There were no bar mitzvahs. There was no outlet. And people were really, they were starved from socialization. So anything we can do now for singles that's in a safe way and a trusting way, that's all any of us want to do.
All right, just to put it out there, Modate has a very human element with people having connectors, and we're not straight app anyway. So why do you think the shidduch crisis exists? Why do you think it's so hard to get guys? And why do you think it just seems like there are more girls than guys?
I think, I don't know how many people are going to agree with me, disagree with me, but you know the expression, it's a man's world. At the end of the day, you know this from dating and all your friends, the guy is the one that has to say yes first. It just, that hasn't really changed that much. And then after that first date, the guy, you're waiting for the guy to get back to you, get back to the shadchan. So I think a lot of guys are like, I don't really need the help, so I'm going to try this on my own. Many times they realize this is a lot of work. I'd rather go to a matchmaker who I trust, who is already knows the girl and knows of the girl, and I can just weed it out much faster than wasting my time. And for guys, I feel badly, because you know what? Everyone says it's so much easier for the guys. It's not. You get a zillion names. Your heads are spinning. You don't know what to do. And to have a matchmaker guide you, that's really my goal in the more modern world is we're here to advise, to help, to coach, to weed it through. And I just think having piles and piles of names, what does that help? What doesn't help? You don't know what you're doing. Your head's spinning. This way, if someone's really helping you and working with you, it's a little bit more personal and it's less overwhelming. So I do feel badly for the guys. I do.
Do you think that guys should get to go first? Do you think that that notion is something that like needs to continue, because it is something we have spoken about on previous episodes of the MoPod. Yeah.
Yeah. Do I think so? No. Would I love to change the whole world? Yeah. So it's, you know, step by step. You know, it's interesting. I think if a girl would see a guy at a party or at a kiddish or wherever and say, look, you know, Evan, do you know this guy? I'm really interested. I don't know, maybe that's where we can start, but it's a confidence thing. It's all psychological. This whole, it's a lot of psychological things. Do I think we can change? Yes. Did I ever think certain cultures would ever date on Zoom? Right? That was shocking to your ears.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, anything's possible. Anything's possible, but we can definitely make changes and positive changes step by step and doing it together.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, on MoDate happens to be guys and girls get the suggestion at the same time.
Terrific.
So yeah, definitely trying to change that. And because I think it definitely is a contributing factor. So as a shotgun, you're getting a bunch of calls a day and texts a day. And so I'm wondering, what are the most annoying questions that you get?
I don't know if the word is annoying or just so left field that I thought about this question before the podcast. Annoying would be how outgoing. Like, I don't know. It depends on the situation. How outgoing, how quiet. You know, ask me how tall, I can tell you a fact. How short, I can tell you a fact. And the most annoying, when they say, how deep is she? How deep is he? And I can tell you, after being married for, I think it's going to be 29 years. I know. I'm bad with math, so I can't really count. When the word deep, the conversation, if you think of your parents or aunts or uncles or grandparents, what's a conversation of a married couple? Dinner's at 6. It's going to be meat. Take out the garbage. What do you need at CVS? I'm going to the cleaners. When couples have to discuss deep topics, it's usually not a good thing. Meaning it could be, God forbid, a health issue. It could be a financial issue. It can be infidelity. You need the tools to have a deep conversation. But in reality, how many couples every day have a deep conversation? So the question of how deep is someone, I can't answer that. Go on the date. Play different type of like word games, mind games, and you'll figure it out and see if they have the tools to do that. But how deep a person is and how outgoing, you have to go and experience it and get back to me.
Yeah, deep conversations are overrated. So
they give me a headache.
Do you ever have days where the annoying questions or just constant texts or whatever it is make you want to stop doing this? Do you ever have that feeling?
Yes, but look, I look at the big picture. I really want to help singles find each other and be happy. Maybe I became obsessed with it, but it's a passion of mine and I have a lot going on in my life, but this to me is a huge thing that I have to help singles with, and direct them and coach them and help them and make them laugh, help them if they cry. Dating, there's more grit than glory, unfortunately. And being a shotgun, there's way more grit than glory. It's hard. It's hard. And sometimes my brain really hurts. So sometimes you just have to take a break, which is why we have Shabbos.
Gotcha. On a much lighter note, why do you think that the more modern communities don't really use WhatsApp statuses? Because I know you're definitely a fan of the WhatsApp status. And so I know that a lot of my friends don't even know that such a thing exists. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
What do you mean? Like I post advice on my WhatsApp status?
Yeah, you're a big WhatsApp status poster.
Yeah, that's where I give my dating advice. I don't know. I think I just use WhatsApp. It started really because our family's international. Mm-hmm. So it's really quick. I don't know. The modern world, they use texting more often?
I mean, I use WhatsApp, but I just don't really make WhatsApp stories. I think it might be because people use like Instagram or whatever more often in the modern world than.
So I have my advice on Instagram also, but I don't know, but they should, because you can WhatsApp stories, even if you're looking for an apartment or getting rid of a refrigerator, it's awesome. It's just free advertising and people are always looking at it, and it lasts 24 hours and it's gone.
All right. So we're going to dive into one of our segments here called Let Me Paint You a Picture, where I'm going to give you a dating scenario and you're going to tell me what you think this person should do. Ready?
I'm ready. I hope I'm okay.
Okay. Jeremy and Tamar just went on a first date and it went very well. Before the first date, all communication was done through the shadchan. However, now that they already went on a date, Jeremy figures that he can text Tamar directly. Jeremy texts Tamar that he had a great time and would love to go on another date. Tamar doesn't respond for a few hours, and Jeremy then receives a text from the shadchan saying that Tamar would love to go on another date. Jeremy is confused and put off by the whole situation because he believes that he and Tamar are adults and feels weird about her ignoring his text. What advice would you give to Jeremy?
So I can say this has happened to me 3 times in the past 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
This is when you just have to say everyone works differently. Probably a little bit of miscommunication. So when I get a yes from a boy and then I get a yes from the girl, I ask both of them, would you like me to be in the middle for the first few dates, or can you be in direct contact? So I think the matchmaker there can set the tone. Mm-hmm. When there the rules again are not set, there can be miscommunication, but it's not a big deal. And this is when you see, can this individual roll with the punches, where Jeremy will say, oh, okay, no problem, not a big deal, or she, you know, shouldn't say, oh, he's so arrogant. It's just miscommunication. And the bottom line with a lot of couples and a lot of dating is miscommunication, and roll with it. And it's okay. Because if you can't roll with the small things, then you definitely can't roll with the big things. But I think as with the matchmaker, that's where we come. That's why people like us, because we can kind of set the quote unquote beginning rules, when that awkwardness, when you go out with someone 2-3 times, you don't like him, I'm the bad guy. You don't have to deal with it. You're done, clean, delete her name, delete his name, you're good to go. So that's a good message for the more modern world to say, you know what? Oh my gosh, I didn't have a good time. I have to call her. It's uncomfortable. I have to call him. It's uncomfortable. Use us. That's why we're good at this, because I'm the bad guy. I'm the bad guy.
Okay. Moving on to the Mopod lightning round, I'm just going to fire off some quick questions and you tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Ready.
What is your favorite type of soda?
Seltzer.
Okay. What percentage of suggestions do guys say yes to?
You're asking me a numbers question. I don't know. 5%? I'm really bad at numbers.
Okay. I have another one. What percentage of suggestions do girls say yes to?
Oh, interesting. Not as many as you think.
Okay. How many couples have you set up?
I wish I would have tallied it, because I know how many matches I've made to marriages, but set up, I don't know, thousands.
Let's say matches to marriage.
30.
Wow, very nice. Clean number.
And I didn't remember, I did my son and myself.
Do you count yourself? I don't even know what that really means.
The story is, I saw my husband in shul. I was much, much, much younger. He was friendly with a cousin of mine. And I'm like, oh, that looks like a nice guy. He's cute. I was really very young. So it was a little ridiculous. And a few years later, I tried it again and he asked me out. So I'm going to end with that story when we're done, but I guess so.
Okay. Is the zoo a good first date spot?
No.
Okay. How many weddings do you attend a month?
Depending on the season, 2-3.
Oh, okay. It's not as many as I thought. Apple or Samsung?
Apple.
Thank you, Danielle Ronovers, for coming on the Mopod. Anything else you want our listeners to know before we sign off?
I'm going to give everyone a little bit of the story, and it's true. You can ask my husband. So as I said, I was much younger when I met my husband, saw him in shul. It was a little bit of a joke. A few years later passed. I said to my cousin again, can you ask him? What do you think? So my husband now said at the time, sure, I'll go out with her. He picks me up. We sit in the car. We drive from Long Island to the city. We go to some sort of like music, jazz bar. I don't speak. Not a word. Not a word in the car. Not a word on the date. Another word, home, nothing. Guess what? He asked me out again. So if you ask him why, he said, look, she was cute, she's local. So the reason why I'm telling the story is you never know. The first date can be really boring and quiet, but give it another chance. Because if there's chemistry there and the person didn't speak, try it again. And if you had the person, an amazing personality and the chemistry was try it again. The chemistry and the personality will help you build a relationship with the Midos and everything else. So give things a chance. Open up your mind. Cut down your checklists. Really think what's important to you. And I wish everyone the best of luck. We are here as matchmakers to help. We really do care. We do make mistakes and we do say, I'm sorry. But the goal here is to really help the singles find each other. So I thank you for the opportunity. Never did a podcast before. And I wish you hatzlacha in all of your endeavors.
All right. Thank you for coming on. Pump the volume.